Welcome back. We're going to now talk about types of definitions and how we try to go about getting definitions all over the place, whether it's in science and everyday life, definitions for dictionaries, whatever, because we need to reflect on that, decide what kind of definition we need of religious belief in order to go forward in this study. So first of all, let me say that one kind of definition is what we call an archetype. That means we define a thing by comparing it with the classic example of that kind of thing. Suppose we say we need a definition of a tree. It would probably be very hard to write out exactly the properties that all trees have, the combination of which is true only of trees. More likely what we do is we have in mind some classic example of a tree. Maybe a giant sequoia is our idea of the best kind of tree there is. It's certainly the biggest. And then we compare all other things to that archetype, that example that's the prime example of what it is to be a tree. Of course, that might lead us astray a bit because bonsai trees only get to be this big when they're fully mature. But nevertheless, that's the way a lot of people define something, if it's sufficiently like what they think is the classic example of that type of thing. This doesn't work for religion at all. And I can tell you very briefly why. For people in Western Europe and North America, the classic example of a religious belief is going to be belief in God. Judaism, Christianity, and Islam all agree that there's one transcendent creator God who called the universe into existence and then offers human beings redemption. But in the Orient, we have very different religious traditions, particularly in India, in China, and Japan. They're not the only countries. But we have Hinduism and Buddhism. Now, Hinduism and Buddhism, at their core, there are many, many varieties of each one, understand. But the core teaching, the teachings held by the Brahmin Hindus and the Buddhist monks, is that there is no such transcendent being. What is divine is not a being named God who is personal and wants to enter into personal relations with human beings. What is divine is an impersonal something that is just being itself. It's not a being. It's not an individual. It's the being that's in everything. And what you try to do is get yourself into a state of mind in which you can come to see that that's true and then achieve not being reborn after you die, but being absorbed into the divine. So their classic archetype, the best example, the most obvious example of religion would be that kind of being. In Hinduism, it's called Brahmanatman, and Buddhism has a number of names for it, Dharmakaya, suchness. Also, one of the names in Buddhism is nothing. By which it doesn't mean there's nothing at all there. It means not a thing. It's not an object. It's not an individual. It's beingness. Well, if that's the archetype, then belief in God isn't a religion. And if belief in God is the archetype, belief in Brahmanatman or nothingness isn't a religion either. They're two unalike. They have nothing, seem to have nothing in common. So that rules out this kind of definition. There's another kind of definition that's called nominal. A nominal definition means it's arbitrary. Okay, for our purposes here, we're going to say that this is what this word means. That may not correspond to reality. It's just what we're going to do here. So people may have a map and they are trying to argue in court about a traffic accident that took place. And they're going to say, all right, I put an arrow up here. Here's my map. And here's the intersection where the accident took place. And we're just going to call this direction north. Doesn't matter whether it really is, but for purposes of interpreting the map, that's going to be north, this is going to be south, and so on. But obviously that's not going to help. There are a wide variety of religions in the world. You just got a taste of that when I explained just a little bit of Hinduism and Buddhism. There's also Taoism. There are also many other religions. And just offering a nominal definition doesn't help us sort out or tell whether a belief is religious or it's not. It's no help whatever. What we need is what people in logic and in philosophy call a real definition, or essential. These are very hard to come by, but it's what we really need. Because in an essential definition, we state the characteristics that are true of all of this group, but the combination is true of only this group. That's what singles it out and is able to define it. So if we got a real definition of a tree, it would name all the characteristics that were true of trees. The combination, however, is true only of trees. That's hard to do. And often, even in science, we have to get along with something less than an essential definition. There's another kind of definition that's used often in science where we can't get a real definition, and it's called operational. An operational definition just defines something by what it will do under certain circumstances. So, let's see if we can do this. An archetypal definition of water might be the ocean. Something is water if it's a lot like the ocean. A nominal definition of water would be, it's whatever I can wash my clothes in. A real essential definition of water would be it's H2O. It's the molecule that we get when we combine two hydrogen atoms with an oxygen atom. An operational definition would say this stuff is water if it boils at 100 degrees centigrade, it freezes at 0 degrees centigrade, and if we do electrolysis on it, we get hydrogen and oxygen gas in a ratio of 2-1. That would be an operational definition. That's no good for religion either. How are you going to say that something is a religious belief provided under these conditions it does this, that, or the other? That it doesn't even seem to apply because it doesn't apply. No, what we need is a real definition. We need to figure out what the characteristics are that religious beliefs have that other beliefs do not. And that's not simple. But it's not impossible. I'm going to propose a definition. You got your seatbelt on? There is, I think, a common element in all the different religions. And this not only includes all the major world religions, the ones I just named, Judaism, Christianity, Islam on the one side, Hinduism, Buddhism, Taoism on the other. These are great worldwide religions. There are many that aren't worldwide at all. They're smaller. They're tribal religions in Africa and the South Pacific Islands and among Eskimos and so on. There are all sorts of beliefs all over the world. But this singles out what is common to them all. And let me put it this way. Phrase it as a question first to ease you into this. In Judaism and Christianity and Islam, what does God depend on? What has to be true for God to exist? What causes God to exist? And I think you'll all immediately say, nothing. That's not right. God's the creator of everything else. God doesn't depend on anything, and you'd be right. So let's do the same thing now with Hinduism, Buddhism, and Taoism. What is it that Brahmanatman depends on, or the nothingness, or the Tao? Well, that's a silly question. Those names are the names of the reality that generates everything else. That reality doesn't depend on anything. Right. And now if we begin to pursue this, having singled that out, we begin to look at folk religions. Say, the high god of the Dieri Aborigines or of many tribes in Africa. These two are thought to be what everything else depends on while it doesn't depend on anything. To give a name to this characteristic, I'm going to use the term self-existent. That's not a term that occurs in the scriptures of any of those religions. But they all say that that the divine created everything else. It generates everything else. Everything else depends on the divine. The divine doesn't depend on anything. And I'm going to call that self-existent. There are other names for it. Probably speaking from the standpoint of logic, the cleanest way to put it is this. It's what is unconditionally non-dependent. In Taoism, the Tao is said to be the unproduced producer of everything else. That's another way to put the same thing. In other words, a key element here is that all the religions regard as divine whatever the reality is that is self-existent and doesn't depend on anything else and generates everything else. So everything depends on the divine. The divine doesn't depend. Now this would even be true of some of the beliefs of North American Indian tribes. There the divine is called Wakan, and there's a whole realm of Wakan beings. And no one of them created the world, but at the world in which we live, and we ourselves, depend on the Wakan beings who can influence, and different ones of them may have charge over whether you get good crops or a good hunt or a long life or whatever. So the specific ways that they impact humans is divided up among them, and there may be some that don't impact humans at all, importantly, but they're still non-dependent. The realm of beings is non-dependent. And the world we live in depends on that. And that's the pattern that I notice in all of them. And that's what's going to serve as my definition. Something is a religious belief if it's a belief in something as the divine, that is self-existent reality, that is the origin of all else. So let me start by clearing the board again and putting that up so that you get to copy it down or underline it in the book, whatever. It's getting a little messy there. Excuse me for the house cleaning chores. Let's put this up as a formal definition. A belief is a religious belief, and this symbol means if and only if, one, it is a belief in something as divine, and that's the term I'm going to use. Some religions might want to use sacred or holy. It doesn't matter. I don't care what you call it. As long as you realize that the divine means self-existent, the self-existent reality, but as the divine reality that produces all else. Okay, now that's as far as we've gotten so far. But that's not the only part of the definition. There's more. Because beliefs can be religious besides being a belief in something as divine if they're about how the non-divine relates to the divine. That's still a kind of religious belief. In other words, in Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, the non-divine is the cosmos, the universe. God calls that into being and it remains dependent on God at every moment in every respect. That's one idea of a relation of the non-divine to the divine. In Hinduism, Buddhism, and Taoism, the divine permeates the world and is the world insofar as it's real at all. And everything about the world in which we live that doesn't look as though it's self-existent is just an illusion, because it really is self-existent. The divine is all there is. So that's a second kind, or a belief. Second kind of belief. A belief in how the non-divine relates to, that is, depends on, the divine. And now, that's not all there is to the definition either, because there's another sense. Or, three, and this is what we usually think of as religion. So if this third one wasn't in it, this would be totally inadequate. It's a belief about how humans can stand in proper relation to the divine. And that's what we usually think of as the practice of religion. The organizations and traditions and teachings, the customs, the rites, the sacraments, the rituals that religions teach and promote are all done in order to help humans stand in proper relation to the divine. And that implies that they can also stand in improper relation. There's something to be gained by knowing the proper relation to the divine reality on which everything depends. So the third is, it's a belief in how humans can stand in proper relation to the divine reality. Now, when I came on this definition a long time ago, it was after being assigned to teach a comparative religion course, and I thought that the first thing I ought to do in that course is define religion so that we know what it is we're studying about. To do that, I visited local libraries, and not only the library of the college where I was teaching, but other universities and libraries, and I got all the books I could on comparative religion, and I just read the introduction. What's this book about? And I found that the older ones, the ones from the late 1800s and early 1900s, all said the divine is this. So, and they didn't all agree. Some said it's this, it's X, it's Y, no, it's Z, no, it's okay. Then as we got more toward the middle of the last century, around the 40s and so on, the 50s, we got people writing books saying, just combining all those suggestions. A religious belief is X or Y or Z. They put them together, but lumping them together didn't help. There still were obvious religions that didn't fit the definition, and the definition fit things that obviously weren't religions. So around the late 50s and on the 60s and 70s, we got a whole switch in the field. People writing said, it can't be defined at all. That's how we're going to get out of this. We're just going to say that it's like pornography. We're going to say we can't define it, but we know it when we see it. That's what the Supreme Court said once about pornography. So put religion in bad company, but all the same, it seemed to get them out of difficulties. Problem was, they went ahead to write a book on comparing religions, If they don't know which things are religions, how do they know which ones to compare? So I was very puzzled about this. And it seemed to me that after I noticed this common core to all the religious beliefs, that I had seen it before. And I checked again and found that I was right. I had seen it before. I mean, I came up with it, but it's not original to me. People had come up with it before me. In fact, long before me, in one of the ancient Greek philosophers, Anaximander, had stated this somewhere around 600 BC. Aristotle copied him on that. Plato and Aristotle agreed. Here's the way Aristotle puts it. He's wondering in his work whether it's possible to get a science of the divine. And he gives a bunch of objections to it, and then he tries to show that the objections don't win. Therefore, he says, about that which can exist independently and is changeless, there is a science. And if there is such a kind of thing in the world, here surely must be the divine, because this is what's immortal and indestructible, as Anaximander and most of the natural philosophers maintained. So that was an old tradition by Aristotle's day. He came 300 years after Anaximander. And I wondered what had become of it. And I found, as I pressed it, that all over the ancient world, everybody accepted this definition. This is what the divine is. They did not agree on how to describe the divine reality. You understand? They disagreed on who or what was divine, but they all agreed on what it meant to be divine. That difference is a lot like the difference between what would happen in a close election, presidential election in the U.S. There might be two candidates, and there would be real disagreement as to which one won the election and which one becomes the president. But there's no disagreement about what the presidency is. The office of the president, everybody agrees on. Who occupies it, they don't agree on. And that's largely what we have here. There's worldwide agreement on what it means to be divine and worldwide disagreement on what it is that is divine, what it is that fulfills that office. I wondered what became of it, and I found that in the ancient world, this definition of divine was held by just about everyone with no one dissenting, that it was held through the Middle Ages, and that it was only in fairly recent times that it sort of dropped off the map. In the 18th and 19th centuries, it seemed to disappear, but by the early 20th century, there was a large group of people who were experts on religion, either comparative religion, philosophy of religion, theology, who all agreed with this definition. And yet, it still does not hold, it does not prevail today in religious studies. Most people don't know of it, and when you present it, they say, no, that can't be right, and they give objections. We're going to look at some objections in our next segment. But I found, and just off the top of my head, here are a few in case their names are familiar to you. C.S. Lewis, Paul Tillich, Hans Kuhn, the Catholic philosopher of religion, Norman Kemp Smith, Mircea Eliade, great comparative religion scholar at Chicago, And a host more. There are about 15, 16 very prominent, famous people, all of whom held this, advocated it, and it still doesn't prevail in religious studies. What still prevails is, well, we can't define religion. So that's a major disagreement for me. I think that's false. And we'll take another break here, and you can digest this, and we'll come back and look at the objections to this definition, and I'm going to argue that the objections fail. That won't surprise you.